Men's basketball is playing for some hardware. Baseball puts up some crooked numbers, and track and field gets rightfully honored. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how's it going?
It was going pretty good today up until I walked outside to come over here to record. It is like 60 mile an hour winds, blizzard conditions, but
yeah, I was and it's crazy because I was thinking about walking to work today. And I was like, I need to start checking the weather because right now I'm in short sleeves and like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
You're going to freeze on your way back. That's what you're going to do.
I may just stay out here in the podcast room until next episode and then hope the weather clears up
by then. Yeah.
It clears up.
You're going to spend your spring break in the podcast room.
It's better than going outside right now. But we have some things good for the men's basketball team. Let's start off with men's basketball because they get to play inside where it's nice and heated. Men's basketball record still the same. I won't go over it. Just notable for this conversation, they're 11th in the nation because we're playing some good competition. It's that part of the season. Last time out was against Northwestern. Man, this was a highly touted, but we'll break it down. It was less exciting than I thought it would be. I'm not saying that it wasn't not exciting, but just the way that Concordia was able to keep Northwestern at bay in this one was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was still competitive and relatively tight at the end.
Yeah.
You know, a final score was pretty tight, but they were never really looking that threatening.
Yeah, let's break it down. So this is a 67-61 win versus number 13 Northwestern. They were the number 3 seed in the GPAC Saturday. This was in Seward for the GPAC semifinal round. Going into this game, it's worth noting that both teams were injured. Northwestern's 6'6 All-American forward, Alex Van Kalsbeck. Kalsbeck?
We'll go with that.
Does that work? Alex Van Kalsbeck, who is one of two Kalsbeck twins on the Northwestern roster. This is the All-American one. He was sidelined with an injury. It's got to be pretty serious because this is, you know, getting near the end of the season. He was sidelined with the injury. Concordia was missing Elijah Gaith and Lucas Helms. Gaith is expected to return. I don't know if he's playing today, but he's expected to return as early as next week for the opening of the Nationals round.
Yep.
And Helms is out for the season. It was a very tight contest early on, as expected. Northwestern had a 26-25 lead with 5:39 left in the first half. That was the last lead they would have all game.
Wow.
From that point onward, Concordia went on a 12-2 run and went into the locker room with a 37-28 lead. They took that in halftime. Worth noting in this first half, sophomore Hayden Frank. I don't feel like we've said his name at all.
Not very much.
Not often.
He was an exciting, you know, freshman prospect last season.
Yeah.
We haven't heard his name too much. We've had a lot of young guys like Elijah. We've had Brooks Kissinger doing some good things.
Yes.
But Hayden is getting his name in the spotlight
a little bit. When the lights are the brightest, too. He had 11 points in the first half. He would finish as the second leading scorer behind Tristan Smith with 17. Going into the second half, Northwestern actually outscored Concordia in the second half, 30-33, but they couldn't overcome the 9-point deficit. Concordia did a good job. They were always, and this is what we were alluding to, they were always at arm's distance.
Mm-hmm.
And Concordia just did a great, I think they never got within like 3-5 points. And as we mentioned, last time they had that lead was halfway through the first half.
Yeah, they would score a couple points and then we'd answer right back. It was neither team went on really big stretches of scoring.
Yeah.
We'd score, they'd score, we'd score, they score to kind of keep them, like you said, at arm's length, 8-9 points clear.
And this is going to bring in tie into that point. I would not want to be a fly on the wall in the Northwestern locker room. Or maybe I would. If I was a fly that was a Bulldog fan, I would. If I was a Northwestern Red Raider fly, I would not want to be on that wall in the locker room because they got to be kicking themselves after the game. Northwestern didn't hit their shots. Went 2-for-9 from downtown in the second half. Only shot 32% from the field. Dang. On 31 shots. So they were chucking them, too.
Yep.
And this is contrasted. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Concordia had a similar shooting percentage from 3. But then we shot 45% from 2.
That'll do it.
We were just able to finish up close and personal. Smith Shutt is back in action. Fully healthy Smith Shutt. 26 points between the two of them. 22 rebounds. I think it's more than 26. That's probably a typo. It's got to be. Because I know Tristan Smith had 20. I think it's 36.
Okay.
Because
that sounds right.
I think Shutt had 16. Smith had 20. 22 rebounds between the two. For a 69 combined minutes, Shutt played like 35 minutes this game. So good to see him. He's back fully healthy.
Back on the court, yep. Had him rested a little bit.
Yeah. And then tying it in, we're talking about shooting woes. We gotta give licks both sides. Something to note. Hayden Frank, shout out, huge game. 4 for 8 from three. Huge. 50%. The rest of the team, 3 for 18. So something to keep your eye on as things move forward. This is a team that we know can shoot the three.
Yes.
But if they go cold, things could get dicey.
And just checked up on that stat. It is 36 points. Noah had 16. Tristan had 20.
Nailed it. Alrighty. After this game, some news. This isn't really even news. I don't know. I need to look up the definition of news, but I don't think this qualifies as news. Tristan Smith got more GPAC Weekly Awards. This is news. He got the offensive and the defensive GPAC player.
They're throwing everything at him.
So why not? I'm getting scared. The wind is blowing.
Yeah, well, there's a window right next to us, and the snow and the freezing rain is pelting against
it. I don't know if you could hear it on the podcast. Hopefully not. So maybe.
There's some trees pretty close.
This might be one of our quicker episodes. I don't know. Let's see.
If you're a loud crash and the audio cut out.
Yeah, that's
the blizzard is in the room now.
That's us dying. Also, some more Tristan Smith stuff. Small College Basketball named Tristan to its 15-player Trevor Hudgens Award watch list. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics, but that's really cool. Also, Tristan Smith was named to the 2025 State Farm Dark Horse Dunker Competition.
Wow.
This is a fan voting thing. I don't know the specifics, but if you go to @CollegeSlam on X, formerly known as Twitter, that's where you can go to vote. I don't know when the polls open. And you can also go to @College_Slam on Instagram. And they said that the polls would be there. I don't know when they open, but it is a fan vote thing.
Okay, so you should go to both and vote for him on both of those.
Ideally. And it's Tristan with like 20 other players from across. This is all basketball that is in D1.
And isn't this like a bracketed thing? So it'll be him up against one other guy and then all the way to the final?
It might be. I don't know the specifics. I think the audience can do a little legwork on this one. Go to the College Slam on X.
No matter how it is, go vote for him.
Yeah, go vote for him because he is certainly deserving. Now, next up, the GPAC Championship. Actually, as we record this, this happens like in a few minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes till tip-off.
30 minutes till tip-off. This is against Morningside. Just a quick preview. Morningside, they are the 4 seed in the GPAC, unranked nationally. This is interesting.
Yep.
They only received 2 votes in the final poll of the season.
Wow.
They were like a few coaches' nods, you forget your keys. They were almost forgotten from the poll altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Mustangs are 2-0, though, against Concordia this season, but with the caveat, they haven't played since December 4th.
Yeah, they played each other really close. Like, the home and away was really close to each
very,
other.
Very, very early in the season. Morningside has the GPAC's second leading scorer in Joey Scoff. He's averaging 22.4 a game. He's a guard, junior, 6'2", so something to be aware of as he, you know, maneuvers on the
yep.
wings. And they just beat nationally ranked number 7 Dort.
Okay.
109-106. Best wow. game of the year. Did you see the highlights from this?
No, I didn't.
Go to Dort's it'll be on Dort's Twitter, and the play that forces overtime is just stupid.
Who scored it?
It was Dort.
It was Dort.
Dort was down by 2 in regulation, and it was, I'm forgetting the exact play now that I need to remember it, but it was just nuts. It was like a wild shot, crazy, chuck it up. They force overtime, and in overtime, Morningside is just barely able to edge him out. And again, this is unranked Morningside beating number 7. That's not number 7 in the GPAC. That's number 7 in the nation Dort.
That's nuts.
So they're feeling themselves coming into Seward. Fun fact, before we move on to another sport, Concordia, the men's team, 4-0 in GPAC title games. And
oh my gosh.
They have all been against other teams. In 2003, our first GPAC title game, we beat Dort. 05, we beat Sioux Falls. 2020, we beat DAC West. 2022, we beat Jamestown. So, will the Morningside Mustangs be the next on that list? We shall see.
We certainly hope so.
We certainly hope so.
And we're going to find out soon.
Yeah, we will.
Very soon, before this podcast is uploaded.
When you're hearing this, you'll know. So, Yeah, but it's definitely going to be a good one. It's an exciting matchup for sure.
No spoilers from us.
No spoilers. But track and field, we're talking about Tristan Smith and possibly the basketball team getting some hardware. Some track and field participants came home with some honors. Do I have that correct?
You do have that correct. We had some excellent performances from some of our track and field athletes. We mentioned on the podcast last week a couple of the our athletes had competed on Friday. We had Johnny Jerkin.
There he is.
In our favorite event, the race walk.
He's so cool.
He ended up qualifying for finals in the 3K race walk, and he ended up becoming an All-American. The freshman got 7th place with a 13:44.23.
I didn't expect anything else.
13 minutes and 45 seconds.
For a 3K?
To walk a 3K.
Was that like a mile and a half?
That's 200 meters short of 2 miles.
Wow. Whoa.
So that's like...
He's like jogging it there.
That's like a 7-minute mile pace.
Yeah, that's nuts, actually.
That's really crazy.
Okay, good.
And he is well recognized for his performance with that 7th place in All-American.
Johnny Jerkin never ceases to amaze.
Johnny Jerkin was not the only one to get All-American honors. Abigail Gerber, we've talked about her a lot on the podcast. Shot put, she got 8th place in that. She threw 44 feet, 10 and 3 quarters inches. Mason Ostermeyer, a guy we were looking at to do some really big things in Nationals, didn't have his best day, unfortunately. He hit a mark of 15 feet, 9 inches. His PR is 16 feet, 3 inches.
Yeah,
so he didn't quite get up to where he could be. Regardless, it wouldn't have been enough to hit first place. There were two guys who vaulted over 17.
Oh, my goodness.
So just people who came out of nowhere and just had incredible days. So he would have been sitting around 3rd or 4th with his PR, but still a very good day for him. He also got 7th place, All-American. He's a junior, so he's got all of next season. He's got outdoor first.
You know. See, okay, now I'd be interested to see where the 2 first place guys went to school. Do you have that?
I do not.
Okay, well, I have a theory because we are up here in a little bit of altitude, at least compared to Gainesville. So the air is a bit lighter, and in Gainesville, there's like a more humidity because the ocean's right there. I think that the heavier air and the more humid air may have kept him closer to the earth.
Interesting.
And I think that the first 2 people that we haven't heard of them because they're not in the G-Pack.
Right.
Hint, hint. I think they probably are from down south, and they probably have been...
They're used to the boggy conditions.
This is home...
Living in the swamp.
Home atmosphere advantage.
I think so. So I think Mason did quite an excellent job for the conditions he was put
in. Yes, yes. How can anybody be expect? Come on.
And you know what? I believe Nationals for outdoor are in the Midwest.
Yes.
So we're going to have home field advantage.
Where a humble Nebraskan can shine.
Mm-hmm. Where he can vault 18 feet.
Yes.
In this, Kansas air or somewhere around
light
here.
Air. Exactly. Then he'll catch a drift, too.
Pretty
much. They've got this 70-mile-an-hour wind that we've got going right now.
You can launch him over 20 feet.
Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy. It's like on those old Madden games when you had a kicker and then you like simulated the weather conditions like as a hurricane and you could kick 100-yard field goals.
Just launch that puppy.
Yeah.
Launch Mason up in the air even higher. So he had a good performance. Got 2 more. Adriana Rodenzel, our GPAC track and field athlete of the year.
Huge.
She got 5th place in the 60-meter hurdles.
Saw the video for that, too.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, yep.
She ran that in 8.44 seconds to claim her All-American title. And then our top performer at Nationals, Abby Wolgemuth, weight throw, 62 feet, 1 3/4 inches, runner-up.
Oh, so close.
So close.
But great job.
Still, so close.
Yeah.
She got 2nd place. Amazing job by her. That's one of her top marks of the year.
Good for her.
So fantastic performance from her and from all the athletes at Nationals. We had even those who didn't get on the top 8 list. Lots of them still had PRs. Now our distance medley, they PR'd. A lot of the distance events, they were able to do a little bit better because they have a banked track in Florida.
Oh,
which is one
I
of the
see.
Ones where it goes up at an angle as you get to the further lanes.
Yeah, like so a Daytona.
Pretty much, yeah. So converted, it's... You have to do some conversions, but basically...
Oh, do they factor that into the times?
They just go off the times for, you know, the placements. But if you're comparing, like, your times on a normal track to a banks track,
see.
There's, like, a calculation you can do for that.
Because there's like, I remember this at high school. I did, I don't look like it, but I did track and field at high school just as like a thrower. Mm-hmm. So like I got to be lazy the whole day and eat all the snacks and watch the athletic people do
steal after. Everyone else's snacks.
No, yeah, that's what I was. That's what I did track for. But I remember there being conditions, especially for like triple jump and long jump, that if they had too much, was it tailwind?
Yep.
That like your time would be viewed differently. Mm-hmm. Is it kind of same with like, oh, well, he ran this time, but it's on a curved track.
Right, that'll definitely be taken into account. I see. And like as we get into outdoor season, certain national marks are, I know, like national records and stuff, you have to take the wind into account for like for distance events, it doesn't matter because you get the wind both ways. But for the sprints, for the 1 and 200, for sure, if there's heavy tailwind, they definitely take that into account.
Yeah, okay.
But looking forward to outdoor season, they have a little bit of a break. The first meet is going to be, it's a Kearney Hastings invite on March 29th, which will take place at Kearney High School.
Okay.
So forward to that. They get, our national people get a little bit of a break.
Yeah, they deserve a break.
And then right back into training for that long, not very long, but... good outdoor season.
Yeah, yeah. And big expectations because this
is a
very successful squad, as by their indoor record and outdoor, they've been great.
Yes, and team-wise, both teams were in the top 20.
Yeah, wow. I mean, there's a lot of teams that you can throw a lot of superlatives at here at Concordia, and the track and field team is definitely one.
100%. They're one of those that are always up there, always making nationals, always placing well.
Pride of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about doing well athletically, baseball has been off to a very, very, very good start.
Yes.
Very decent start. More than decent. 8-3 is their record now. They have not gotten into conference play, have yet to play a GPAC opponent, although they did play Jamestown, so that maybe like half counts. And they are still number 20. We're still going off that preseason poll because they haven't dropped a new poll yet. Although with how they've been competing recently, I would expect them to maybe rise a bit. Time will tell with this next weekend series, but we'll break that down here in a second. Their past series was a weekend series versus William Penn University, the Statesman. Very cool.
Ooh.
I like that mascot.
That's a cool name, yeah.
I do. I like that mascot a lot. And the Dickinson State University, the Blue Hawks. Thoughts?
Not quite as cool, but I still like it.
Definitely no Statesman. They were in a home field baseball complex in Kansas City. Kansas City, Kansas. So... they were on
getting out of Missouri.
They're on that half of Kansas City, and they played two games Friday, two games Saturday. The game one Friday ended up being their only loss for the series. They went 3-1 versus William Penn versus the Statesmen. They lost 8-3. It was a 5-4 game when we had the lead heading into the bottom of the third until William Penn put up an 8 spot. Oof. In the bottom of the third, so really just had a great inning there. A lot of that came at the expense of Christian Gutierrez, star of the program, although he didn't have a hot start. He came out, he had the bump for the Bulldogs, only went 2 innings pitched, allowed 4 hits, 3 walks, but 6 earned runs. So it's really, I mean, he's 2-1 on the season now, he gets the loss, but... that stat line is just very untimely. You talk about on the offensive side of things, it's always about timely hitting.
Right.
You get a runner on second, you love to get that single to get the runner home. This is the opposite of that. Because 4 hits, 3 walks isn't a horrible... Even over 2 innings pitched, mm-hmm. to give up 6 earned runs, it just all came at the wrong time.
It's a little unfortunate, yeah.
All came at the wrong time for him. Offense, though, obviously you put up 8 runs. That's not too shabby. Matthew Rhodes, Bradley Hollick, and Jaden Jordahl all had 2 hits. Good showing from them, but they would have better showings as the weekend would go on. That brings us to Game 2, a classic pitcher's duel. This is versus Dickinson State. It's a 2-1 win. 2-1.
That's tight.
Very tight.
It's a soccer score.
That's a soccer score. 2-1. 3 second-inning runs, courtesy of Jaden Quinn homer. It proved to be all the Bulldogs needed. They had, I think, 3 hits. Yeah, 3. They had 3 hits on the day.
Yep.
Just 2 runs, and all they needed was 2 runs because Alex Johnson was
That's
on the
guy.
Bump. He got the start and his first win of the season. 4 innings pitched, giving up only 3 hits, didn't walk a soul, 0 earned runs, 9 strikeouts. He faced 14 batters, struck out 9 of them.
It's impressive.
But only 4 innings. This is a 7-inning game. What else happened? Dalton Schmidt came in, got the very rare three-inning save. He goes, because it's such a tight game, he's still eligible for the save. Three innings pitched, two hits, one run, one walk, one earned run, five strikeouts, 11 batters faced. So, Alex Johnson with a win, Schmidt with the save, and offense did the bare minimum. They did what they needed to do to get the win.
Exactly.
Now, this brings me to Saturday. Now, okay, ready?
I'm ready.
I'll go for the game scores, and then tell me if you notice anything. Game three was versus Dickinson State. 14-0 win.
Whoa.
Okay. Game four versus William Penn. 14-0 win.
Noticing a pattern.
That's not a typo. I had to double check that. I was reading the article on it, and I thought Jake Knable had a typo.
But turns out he doesn't make mistakes.
Jake Knable never makes mistakes.
Always trust his articles.
And so it's true. 28-0 across two games.
Crazy.
Freshman Micah Sweeten, we shouted him out last time, California native. He ended up getting a no decision, his first collegiate start.
Nice.
Mind you, he's a freshman. So he got a no decision. He pitched really well. He just didn't have the run support in that game. This time, well, he had the run support.
He certainly did. 14-0.
He goes six innings pitched, giving up two hits and 11 strikeouts, facing 19 batters in his second collegiate start, folks. That's some real heavy metal stuff. In a game full of offensive stars, DH Bradley Hollick shined. He went 4-for-5 with 3 RBIs, and he homered. Joining him in the home run fest was Bronx Lewis and Ty Nikolajczak. And usually those are some like on-base guys, so it's nice to see them with some pop.
Yep.
A total of 14 hits, and they drew 9 walks as an offense. And that's just in Game 3. Game 4 versus the Statesmen, another 14-0 win. Braxton Greenberg on the bump. He gets his first win of the year. A lot of folks getting their first wins of the year. 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, faced 24 batters. He went deep into this one. Jaden Quinn had a phenomenal game 4. 3-for-4, 3 RBIs. He hit his second home run of the weekend. Tanner Tompkins and Matthew Rhodes would join him in going long. As an offense in this game, 11 hits, 5 walks. A lot of numbers, but they are
all a lot of stats. Yep.
They are all good for the Bulldogs if you were tuning out right there. Interesting note. This is something that's very interesting because a lot of the times this is a program that is highlighted by their stars. You obviously think about Joey Gabranski last season, Jaden Quinn last season, and then this season. And then you've got a lot of pop from guys like, you know, Matthew Rhodes, Jaden Jordahl. And then you've got the on-base production from guys like Ty Nikolajczak. However, lost in the superstardom of the lineup is just how well-rounded it is. Something, and this is just across the last two games, so the two Saturday games where we scored 14 apiece. Concordia saw 14 different batters reach base. Different folks.
Wow.
And all 6 of our home runs came from different hitters.
Hmm.
We had 6 home runs across two games, and they were all from a different person. Also, lost in the magnificence of our offense, which, you know, sometimes can put up a lot of crooked numbers like we see there, is the pitching. Great stuff from the pitching. And how about this? How about freshman Micah Sweeten, again, California native, got GPAC Pitcher of the Week for his two first collegiate starts.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
His two first collegiate starts. First time he's ever pitched against college offense, gets Pitcher of the Week in the GPAC. That was good for 11 and a third innings pitched, with a total of 16 strikeouts. You love to see those figures. Those are some good, healthy-looking numbers, especially for the young buck.
That's crazy. We've got our grad student pitching great, and then we got our freshman.
Yeah.
We got the future and the present and the past.
It's we have a wealth of riches.
We do.
What is that? That's I'm using that term right?
I think so.
Wealth of riches. This is obviously a very successful program, and to be successful, you have to acquire talent and develop talent, two things that this program obviously has been historically phenomenal at.
Yes.
The Bulldog. Okay, here's what I'll mention. Here's the test. Does our rank go up or down? Right now, I think it kind of maybe stays the same because a lot of these teams, you think maybe they're teams that you should have beat. And we did. We beat them. Here's the test. Bulldogs back in action later this week. The first game of a 4-game set is against Southeastern University. Southeastern University, the lowdown on them, number 11 in the nation.
Ooh.
depending on what happens this week, they may be climbing in that rank because they are 16-0, my friend, undefeated.
Uh-oh.
They have yet to lose a game. This is going to be at 5 p.m. Thursday is going to be the first game of this series, March 6th. Following game one, games two and three will be a doubleheader variety on Friday, and then the final matchup will come Saturday. This is probably the first big circle your calendar. We have an opponent coming to town for the baseball this season. This is going to be big.
This will be a really good one.
Not season defining, but this really shows you what you got.
This is one that if you win a couple of these ones, this could be like a little springboard into a really nice GPAC season.
You'd love a split here. A split would be cool if you go two for two. 3-1. I think obviously 4-0 is a bit optimistic. 3-1 is probably what you're shooting for. 2-for-2, even getting one, that's something that that's
shooting
a,
for one at least.
That's a feather in your cap to give an undefeated team their first loss of the season. That's not nothing. So yeah, that's it for baseball. Going to be exciting to see that. Softball back in action. They've had a little bit of a hiatus, haven't they?
Yes,
a little bit of break in the games.
Yeah, so they had games, or six games this weekend, but then they hadn't the previous ones were on February 17th, so it has been a while. We're just going to talk about mainly the two most recent ones from March 2nd. The ones on March 1st were kind of forgettable. A 9-0 loss to Benedictine College and then a 3-0 loss to Baker University.
Yeah.
So there's not much good in those games, but then turned right back around and got a 2-0 win against Graceland and then a 4-2 win against Park University. So coming back from a bit of a rough patch to getting some good wins. So the 2-0 win against Graceland was a bit of a pitcher's duel. So we were talking about baseball having one of those. Softball had one as well. No score through the first six innings.
Wow. Then,
top of the seventh, we got to scoring a little bit. Grace McGuire and Delaney Voschel each had an RBI. And then Voschel and Jennifer Katz had the runs to go with those RBIs. Megan Urich was on the mound for all seven innings, gave up just one hit throughout the whole game, struck out 11.
Good stuff. You like to see that.
Yeah, so, you know, a 2-0 win, you don't have many stats in any direction. I think there was less than five hits in the game total.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're on the right side of that when it's all said and done. Well,
yes, when you come out 2-0 on top, you won't complain too much.
Yep.
Park University, we went up early. We got two runs in the first inning. We got a third in the third inning. Park brought it back to 3-1 in the top of the sixth inning, but then we extended the lead once again in the bottom of that inning. And then Park had one more run in the bottom of the seventh, but did not force us to get back into the batter's box for the seventh.
There we go.
Walked it off after their seventh inning. Katz, once again, she's been doing some great base running this year. She had two runs again and then had an RBI off her two hits. Taryn Ganstrom had two RBIs and one run on her one hit. And then Laney Voschel had one RBI, and then freshman Avery Boyle had a run as well.
Young buck, love to see him.
Yes, and Ganstrom was pitching all seven innings. She had allowed five hits, two runs, and then struck out three.
All right.
So solid day on the mound for both pitchers.
Yeah.
They are coming up on a pretty exciting trip. I know baseball, they're gearing up for a trip to Florida.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention that. Southeastern is in Florida.
Yes. So. And then softball will be going the other direction. They will be going West Coast to Arizona, Tucson, for some games over spring break.
Wow.
And that'll start off on March 9th with William Penn University.
We know who they are.
We do know who they
the
are.
The State's women.
The State's women.
Do you think they do that?
Probably not.
Because in my high school, it was the guys were always the Eagles, and then the girls were always the Lady Eagles.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that.
I know some schools differentiate.
It wasn't like an official thing, but we had like the Badgers and then the Lady Badgers.
Yeah. That counts.
Yeah.
I think softball is going to be interesting to see what they do with this pre-conference work things out time, because we say this is, you know, same for any sport, that it really it's time to grind. There was a term I was going to use, but I won't on the podcast.
We'll use that other one.
Yeah, it's time to see what you're about when it comes to conference. But
yes.
These pre-conference games, is a very interesting way, especially in a sport like baseball and softball, when there's so much nuance to defensive lineups and your batting order and who pitches and then bringing pitchers in out of the bullpen and stuff like that, that it's really nice to have these pre-conference games to sort things out. I think softball could use that more than baseball.
Probably. But you can even see that on both sides. You've got baseball. Sure. They've tested out a bunch of different pitchers so far.
Yeah.
All of them have done pretty well so far. Yeah. You can see that on the softball side as well. They use two different pitchers over two games. They're usually giving them full games to try to see what's going on. But yeah, lots of testing out, lots of seeing what works. Different batting orders, like you said, different pitchers. So definitely working out some kinks right now.
For sure. And then before we go, last bit of news was we had a very strong Bulldog do very strong things.
We had an extremely strong Bulldog. We had freshman Caden Mima in weightlifting. So Mima got the individual national title in the 61-kilogram weight class. So for weightlifting, they just do two lifts. They do the snatch and then the clean and jerk.
Okay.
So Caden, he is 61 kilograms.
He said, wait, one second. For my American audience, I have my phone out right now. I'm Googling.
Okay, 61 kg.
Is 134.482 pounds.
Okay. He snatched 96 kilograms.
96. Ooh, 211 pounds.
Yeah, so the snatch, isn't that, that's the one where you just lift it straight up off the ground over your head.
Yeah, that's insane.
So that's almost two plates.
At 134?
And then arguably even more impressive, clean and jerk. So, you know, the clean into the, basically the overhead press.
Yeah.
116 kilograms.
Oh! That's 255 and change.
255.
Dude, at 135?
And he weighs 135. He's clean and jerking almost twice his body weight.
Dude, are you kidding me?
It's crazy.
Freshman?
Freshman.
Attaboy, young buck.
Yes.
Love to see it.
And then another excellent performance was Evan Fukuhara. He is 73 kilograms, he's 73 kilograms right now.
160 pounds.
He actually won the 67 kilogram last year.
147.
Placed runner-up this year at 73. So his snatch was 115 kilograms.
253 and change.
And then his clean and jerk was 145.
Whoa, 145?
145.
319 and 0.67.
That's insane.
Oh my god. Wow.
You say three what?
319.
So that's more than
three plates.
For our American clean and audience. Jerk. And he said he weighs 160?
Yeah.
That's less than me.
Wait. He weighs, what was it, 96 kilograms?
73.
He weighs 160 on the nose.
Oh.
Yeah, that's insane.
We have some strong Bulldogs. Let's give the women's side a little bit of love, too.
Yeah, do it.
Taylor Headke, she got fifth in her division, the 59-kilogram. You know, it's you never ask a woman her weight, but it is posted on the Bulldog Athletic website, so you can go check it out yourself without even having to ask.
Shame on us.
Mm-hmm. But we are doing this just to give you some reference for how impressive her totals are. So she had a snatch of 72 kilograms.
158.
And then a clean and jerk of 87.
87 is 191.
And you said, what was her, 59 is what?
59 is 128.
So she weighs
130,
and she's doing a clean and jerk of 190.
Yeah, that's, they say, what's, like, if you can, like, squat your body weight, you're pretty healthy, right?
Yeah.
And these people are just flinging their body weight
For guys, it's like, you're in the top 10% or 5% of men if you can do like 1.5 times your body weight for a squat.
Yeah, for a squat.
And then deadlift 2 times. These guys are clean and jerking 2 times.
That's so crazy. They're just flinging that around, man.
It's nuts.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That's
pretty cool.
That is really cool. I like how weightlifting does like the most off the wall exercises too.
Uh-huh.
Like you do not see that every day in Planet Fitness, someone clean and jerking.
Mm-mm. And if you would like to see it in person, the last event of the year for the weightlifting team is in a month and a half, and it's going to be here.
What?
It's going to be, so they have nationals, and then they have one more meet a month and a half later, April 26th at the Waltz Fieldhouse.
So it's
a home meet.
Is it just in the student weight room?
It says Fieldhouse, so I think they'll have it all set up like on the indoor track
area. Oh, yeah, that would be pretty neat. That would be, and that's open to the public?
I believe so, and it said on the website it starts at 8 a.m., so
If you is it like an all day, like track
I think
type
so,
thing?
Yeah. So if you want to show up at any point throughout the day, it's probably a weekend. So
I wonder where they move the weights from. Do you think they just move the wall? Certainly they have better, like, I bet you it's more like regulation stuff.
They bring something in.
I think we don't. They probably either store, maybe they like rent weights and stuff like that.
Could be.
Or it's stored off campus somewhere.
Yeah. Regardless, no matter what kind of weights they use, it should be fun to at least come by and see what it's all about. See some people throwing 300 pounds around. And that's not even, like, the weight classes get way higher.
Yeah.
So you'll see people throwing around like 400 or 500 pounds.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy. I think, yeah, I've never been to one of those.
Maybe we should go.
I may entertain that idea. Yeah, that would be interesting. Okay, all right. I'm absent-minded right now because I keep looking outside.
He's thinking about, he wants to prolong this so he doesn't have to walk outside.
I don't know if I want to prolong it or get it over shorter. I haven't made up my mind on that yet, but I feel like I am halfway through the second verse of the Little Piggy song. And we are in, what is the one? Straw House? No, Straw's the first one. We're in the Stick House.
Stick House. You're going to make your way back to your brick house.
Yeah, well, I'm not in a brick house right now by the sounds of things. It's been terrifying this entire
episode.
But
regardless, we must leave so that I can get to tip off in 5 minutes.
Okay, well, on that case, that'll be all for this episode of Talking Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for weekly podcasts on the See You in East Sower website and on Spotify. From Cohen Carpenter and Kyle Ulbrich and everybody at the See You in East Sower newspaper, have a good day and go Dogs!